It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark LeBonier. In this hour, quiz shows. Later on, we hear Groucho Marx with the comedy quiz series, You Bet Your Life. Right now, Joe Kelly hosts the Quiz Kids, an NBC broadcast from January 21st, 1951, with special guest, radio man Studs Terkel.
Listen to it fizz!
Alka-Seltzer.
First.
Fast.
And always. Yes, for first aid to fast relief from acid indigestion, headache, and the misery of a cold, always rely on Alka-Seltzer. And now, Alka-Seltzer presents, transcribed, The Quiz Kid, with the chief quizzer himself, Joe Kelly.
Hello, everyone. Yes, Alka-Seltzer invites you to enjoy another question session with America's famous Quiz Kids. We're going to consider all phases of entertainment this afternoon. And from the entertainment field, we have as our special guest, Studs Terkel of radio and television fame. Well, all right, Quiz Kids, let's get busy. First, roll call. Patrick?
I'm Patrick Owen Conlon. I'm 13 years old and a freshman at Calumet High School in Chicago.
Lonnie?
I'm Lonnie Lundy. I'm 15 years old, and I'm a sophomore at Maine Township High School in Park Ridge, Illinois.
Sally Ann?
I'm Sally Ann Wilhelm. I'm 12 years old. I'm in the 7th grade at Central Junior High School in Elkhart, Indiana.
Frankie?
I'm Frankie Vanapluk. I'm 6 years old, and I'm at 1B in the Mount Vernon School, Chicago, Illinois.
And the brand new quiz kid, Susan.
I'm Susan Weiner. I'm 8 years old. I'm in the 4th grade at Hibbert School, Chicago.
All right, kids, now the first question on our program dealing with entertainment of various kinds delves into baseball. It's from Mrs. Irene D. Williams of Taunton, Massachusetts. On what baseball team would you find a player with the same last name as Moses' father-in-law? Or, in other words, his name is the same as the father of Moses' wife, Zipporah. Now, I'm sure that ought to clarify everything. Pat?
Well, Moses' wife, of course, was Zipporah, and Zipporah's father was Reuel, or Jethro. And, of course, that's Sam Jethro of the Boston Braves.
That's a boy. That's fine, Patty. Nice going. Now, your next question is from Mrs. F. Spinka of Chicago. She asks, can you think of any ballet steps or positions a ballerina uses that a man ballet dancer does not use? How about that one? This is a tough one. Sally Ann?
Well, I don't think I've ever seen a male ballet dancer do braids.
What the step is that, by the way?
Well, you're on your toes and you take real tiny steps in a fist position.
Oh, those cute little... Yeah, yeah. I see. All right.
And,
by the way, tell me, Sally.
Well, I never saw a man do adagio with a woman. It's always the other way around.
Uh-huh, very good. Well, tell me, why doesn't a man ballet dancer ever do any of those steps? Why?
Well, I suppose because he has higher elevation and he can show his skill in all the things that take, like high jumps and things like that.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. Well, that sounds logical. All right, Sally Ann, thank you. Now, this next question, kids, in our entertainment show was suggested by Madeline Henderson of St. Louis, Missouri. You will hear recordings of three famous present-day singers, and you are to identify two out of the three. And to play the records for us, we have the proprietor of Studs Place on television who will go back to his first love of spinning records as a disc jockey, the one and only Studs Terkel. Come on in, Studs.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Been looking forward to this meeting with the kids here.
Well, say, fine. Good for you. Now, you just take over and introduce your record, Studs.
Okay, now, kids, the first record you're about to hear is the voice of a very famous singer. This is a roughie. This doll is a contralto. See, some people call her a mezzo. She's a remarkable range. An eminent maestro, Toscanini by name, said this babe has the best pair of pipes of the century. See if you can guess her voice. Here she is now. See, three hands raised. Well, let's do this in order of priority, reverse. Age 12, Sally Ann.
Well, this is just a guess, but I think the best singer in this century would be Lily Pons.
Well, that's a good try, but the range is a little off. Pat?
I think that sounds like Risa Stevens to me.
That's a closer try. She's a mezzo, Lonnie.
I'm pretty sure it's Marian Anderson.
You're right. It's Marian Anderson. Well, it takes three strikes, so you made it. You got the first. That's great. Okay, here's the second. Now, this guy you're about to dig, he's a tenor of considerable heft. Wagnerian, specializes in Wagner, but best remembered for that wonderful opus, Two Sisters from Boston. Now you'll hear his voice.
A name above the stars I see, a certain worth immortality.
We got two hands raised here. Wow. Getting inferiority complex. Pat.
I think that'll be Lawrence Melchior.
Right on the button. Lawrence Melchior. Okay, number three, the finale here. Now, this dame is going to be a toughie to get. Well, Pat, how am I doing? Wait a minute. I'm getting confused now. I was referring to our tutor, Pat, over there.
Joe, I think you're doing all right, Studs. As a matter of fact, I think you're doing too well now. Cut it out.
I wish I could do as well as the ladies and gentlemen sitting opposite me here. Wow. Well, here it is now. This dame is a coloratura. She is dainty. She is petite. And she's hitched to a band leader. Okay, here she is. Three hands again here. Three hands are raised again. Sally Ann?
Well, I think I'm pretty sure that that's Lily Pons.
Hey, you got it that time. Lily Pons. All I can say is I'm amazed.
Oh, well, yes, sirree. That was fine. Thank you very much, Studs. But now don't go away, fellow, because I want you to help me again a little bit later on. Now, kids, this next question is from Mrs. Ruth Ferguson of Seattle, Washington, and it's in the form of an assignment. You are to suppose we are attending a banquet and the speaker has not appeared, and each of you will be called on to make a 30-second speech on any subject until the guest speaker arrives. Mr. Patrick Conlon, may I call on you at this time to say a few words?
Well, you certainly may, Mr. Kelly. My little speech is on television versus education.
All right.
We've heard a lot nowadays about how children's schoolwork has been impaired because they're watching television till all hours of the night, and they don't seem to find time to do their homework. Well, there's been a lot of gripes about this, but I've always found that I've found time to do my homework and still enjoy television. And, of course, there are lots of educational programs on television, especially the Quiz Kids.
A nice finish there, Patrick, my boy. Very fine. Now, Sally Ann, how about you? 30 seconds.
Well, I think I'll talk, since I take dancing, I think I'll talk about dancing. Well, there are about five really good ballet companies. They come, most of them are foreign, and they come from England, especially the Sadler Wells Ballet, and most of them are not American. They usually have long Russian names, and they are very, very good, most of them, and I like the Sadler Wells Ballet the best.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sally Ann, your 30 seconds is up. Now, let's see who's next. Lonnie, how about you taking over the speaker stand?
Well, okay, I'm not going to speak on any topic in general. I'll just pretend that I'm addressing a particular group.
Oh, fine, fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, what a pleasure it is to stand here and look over your smiling faces and think that just 5 years ago that this organization had about 700 members less than the present date. And in our banquet that year, I remember that we had what must definitely be considered second-rate talent. And tonight we have a speaker who will surpass your fondest expectations. Ah, it's wonderful to think how far this club has risen since that day.
Well, very fine, Lonnie. You know, you almost made me forget to eat my ice cream here. And Susan, how about you, honey?
Well, I think I'd like to talk about school. I like school very much, and I think I should try to help my teacher because she always tries to help me in my work and everything. And she doesn't like to holler at us, but she only does when we're bad.
Oh, she does. Oh, I'm not supposed to say anything. Go ahead. You're making a speech.
I like to do my work very much, especially spelling. We do work.
And your time is up, Susan. All right, and Frankie, how about you, my boy?
Oh, I would like to talk about the Quiz Kids.
All right, fine. That's a wonderful topic.
The Quiz Kids is the finest show I've ever been on.
Well, go ahead, Frankie.
Because they have a lot of audience, and it's on television and radio both, with very little shows are on. Radio and television both.
Well, continue now. You have more time yet.
And I like you audience very much, especially on the radio, because we have more audience.
All right, time's up. And by the way, kids, the speaker finally arrived. Yeah, he's here now. Thanks so much for helping out. Now then, the next question from our Alka-Seltzer question box is from Marjorie Wilson of Atlanta, Georgia. And she points out that, lots of people enjoy reading Shakespeare for entertainment. And in turn, many of the characters in Shakespeare had their own hobbies for entertainment. Now tell me this, what character in a Shakespearean play enjoyed doing magic tricks? Susan?
Well, I think it would be Prospero from The Tempest.
The Tempest? That's right. Very, very good, Susan. Now, who in Shakespeare liked to do a little amateur acting for entertainment? Who in Shakespeare liked to do a little amateur acting for entertainment, Patrick?
Well, that might be Hamlet. He had a little
Well, you've got something there. I'm thinking about a different play. Sally Ann?
Well, maybe this is just a guess, but in Romeo and Juliet, Romeo was making mushy love scenes to Juliet, and that might be called acting.
Well,
this is kind of far-fetched, but there were lots of characters in Shakespeare's play, lots of girls who disguised themselves as boys, and of course that was acting. I suppose the most well-known of these would be Jessica in The Merchant of Venice.
Well, kids, you were warm, but you didn't exactly give me the answer that I have on my card here. I was thinking of the players in the play within the play in Midsummer Night's Dream. You remember Bottom and Quince and Flute and Snug and Starveling and all of them? Well, that was a miss, and that means the Alka-Seltzer Award for Marjorie Wilson of Atlanta, Georgia, is one of those dandy Zenith television sets or the large combination phonograph. By the way, I'd like to say a word here about the Alka-Seltzer Awards given away every Sunday. The questions used on our program are sent in by you listeners. When a question is answered correctly, the Alka-Seltzer Award is a fine Zenith transoceanic portable radio that gives worldwide reception no matter where you are. And it's really a dandy set, too, one you'll be proud to own. Now, when the Quiz Kids miss a question, just like they did on the second part of this last one, the Alka-Seltzer Award is a Zenith television set or a large console Zenith radio phonograph combination. And say, the television set is the Zenith Buchanan, and it has everything. A new Super Range chassis to ensure the ultimate in performance. It has the sensational built-in picture magnet aerial, single knob automatic tuning, and the glare band black tube for clearer pictures. The large console radio phonograph plays all types of records and has AM and FM radio. Now, if you would like to try for one of these fine Zeniths, send in a question for our radio program. Address your questions to Quiz Kids, Box Y, Chicago 77, Illinois. Well, let's see. On this next question, it's from Mary Kay Johnson of Los Angeles, California. How have these fields of entertainment changed over the years? First, how does a modern symphony orchestra compare to the orchestra of the early 18th century? Frankie?
Mr. Kelly, well, one of the changes was that the orchestras got bigger and there were more people and more instruments added to the orchestra.
Uh-huh.
And the celeste was added to the symphony orchestra.
That's correct.
And I think the harp was added to the symphony orchestra and the bass clarinet.
Well, that's just fine and dandy, Frankie. Yes, sir. Lonnie had his hand up. I'm going to call on him, too. What were you going to say, Lonnie?
Well, also, in several modern pieces written for the symphony orchestra, a saxophone is used, and of course that wasn't used in the early days.
Oh, that's quite true.
And it's possible for a symphony orchestra now to play some works that, although they had been written early in the 18th century, would never be played because they demanded such a large orchestra, a piece like, say, Berlioz's Symphony Fantastique, for instance.
That's right, Lonnie. That's correct. Now, tell me this. How's the game of football changed since its early days? Pat?
Well, since in the early days of football, there was no such thing as a forward pass.
Yeah.
And the players did not wear helmets, and they were very badly protected from bruises.
Very good.
And there were practically no penalties at all.
Uh-huh.
And it was a much rougher game than it is today. And, of course, the quality of player has improved because of the bigger gates, and it's a lot more interesting now.
That's right. Sally Ann, what were you going to say, honey?
I think long ago they used to kick the ball more, and now they have... Oh, under and over passes. And
that's right.
Else.
That's very true, Sally. Very, very, very true. Well, let's see what our next question is. E.L. Moreland of Chicago must be a hockey fan because he says that every time he goes to the hockey game, there's pipe organ music playing in the arena before game time. Now, if the organist played these songs to welcome the hockey team coming on the ice, which National League team would be playing that night? Try and get 2 out of 3 on this, kids. All right, Howard, first song, please. Lonnie?
Well, I don't know. The song is the William Tell Overture.
That's
by
right.
Rossini.
But can you tell me why, Pat?
Well, that's used as a theme song for the Lone Ranger.
So?
They're the New York Rangers.
That's the boy. That's right, Patrick. Uh-huh. Now, listen to the next one. Pat?
Well, that's I Think I Shall Never See a Poem as Lovely as a Tree.
Trees. Trees.
Actually is the name of it.
Trees, so?
Well, it might be the Maple Leafs.
The Toronto Maple Leafs. That's right. And here's the last one. Lonnie?
That's Indian Love Call, so that'd be the Chicago Blackhawks.
That's a boy. That's right. The Chicago Blackhawks. Well, kids, Mrs. Harriet Brown of Kansas City said in this question, and Studs Terkel, here's where we need your help, son.
Hey, Joe. We're
now, I'd up. Like to ask you to give us a short sketch of an opera in your own vernacular, Turkelese. So, you quiz kids are to identify Studs' opera story told as only Studs Terkel can tell it.
Well, let's assume, kids, we're sitting in the Diamond Horseshoe of the Met. I'd be sitting in the second gallery. Well, here we go. Okay, here's the first opera. Our heroine is a babe who sings coloratura, like Lily the Pons. Now, she has a father who sings baritone. He's also a comic, a jester, like Jerry Lester. His boss is a duke. Wow, look at these hands. I'm finished the opera. He sings tenor. In addition, has a fickle eye. As a result of the duke's didos, the father of the coloratura gets all burned up. He hires a couple of sack artists to do the job on his employer. But the denouement is quite rough on the baritone. And O'Henry Snapper, kids. Or it's not the duke, but the daughter who gets the treatment. They got on the first sentence. I see three hands. Okay, Sally Ann, ladies first.
That would be Rigoletto.
On the button. You know who wrote Rigoletto?
What?
You know who wrote Rigoletto?
Verdi.
Right. Joe Green, they called him in English. Well, here's the second opera. This is a little rougher. This one's about a stock company. Hungry actors knocking about the country in the days before equity. Things are rough all over, especially with the star, a tenor, who was a victim of the green-eyed monster. Now, his wife, who plays the female lead with this outfit, falls for a village bumpkin, aims to run off with him. But the star, thanks to the second banana in the company, discovers the perfidy, so he knocks off his wife and the bumpkin. And he, heartbrokenly, he's got a gulp in his throat, and he's singing, "The comedy has ended." Three hands again. Lonnie.
That's Pagliacci.
On the ball, eat Pagliacci. Pat?
That was written by Leon Cavello.
On the ball. Wow, I'm getting an inferiority complex here. Okay, here's the third opera. There was a soprano who had a dream. She dreamed of a knight coming to defend her. Not on a horse, but on a boat drawn by a swan. Everybody laughed. Ha-ha, the babe is pixelated. But she had the last laugh. For a hero doth appear just as in her dream, and he's her champion. And when he bumps off the villain, he goes away just as he comes on that boat, yodeling, coming for to carry me home. Oh, well, Pat, Sally Ann, Lonnie, let's see. All right, Sally Ann.
That would be Lohengrin.
Right. Composer? Lonnie?
Lohengrin.
Well, I lose. They're batting 1,000. I give up. You're wonderful, kids. Thanks,
and so are you, Studs. Thanks a million. That really had that old Turkelese touch. Come up and see us again sometime. Now, kids, try this one from Irene Secula of Covington, Kentucky. If the following girls of long ago were present-day entertainers, what might you suggest they could sing for an appropriate theme song? For instance, take Marie Antoinette. All right, Pat?
Well, her head could sing, I Ain't Got Nobody.
Wonderful. That's very good. And how about Eve? What might her theme song be? Sally Ann?
Well, she was one of those that ate the apple, so you're the apple of my eye.
Well, that's very good. That certainly is very, very good. Now, here's a question from Mrs. Raymond Gorko of Roseville, Michigan. If you were walking through the zoo, what animal might you see that you could call the Pinocchio of the animal kingdom? Sally Ann?
That would be the anteater because he has such a long nose.
That's right. That's the idea. What animal might you compare to Alice in Wonderland after she ate the cake marked Eat Me? Lonnie?
Well, when she ate the cake marked Eat Me, she kept growing bigger and bigger.
Well, now wait a minute.
No, wait a minute. She kept growing smaller and smaller.
Oh, now wait a minute. We've got the... Sally Ann had her hand up.
Well, I think she...
What happened when she ate the cake?
She grew bigger.
Well, yes, but what part of her body, Sally Ann?
Her neck. And that would be the giraffe.
The giraffe, that's the idea. All right, kids. And now let's get acquainted with the sparkling personality who's standing before our microphone now. She is a teacher in Ray Public School here in Chicago, and year before last, she was nominated for the title of Best Teacher of the Year. Here she is, Miss Hilda Fontaine.
Yes, Mr. Kelly, I was nominated, and I didn't win a thing. But it was a thrill just to be nominated. I know I'm not the best teacher in the country, but when I received that certificate telling me that I had been nominated, that meant at least one boy thought I was. When you teach year after year, and you do, and you wonder just how much good you are doing, and you do, it's a thrill to know that you've made that much of an impression on even one of your youngsters.
Well, Miss Fontaine, who was the student who nominated you?
It was Carl Alving. And you know, it was 3 years after he had been in my first grade that he wrote his best teacher letter nominating me. That was what made me so happy. To think that he remembered me all that time and thought that I could qualify for such an honor. And took his playtime to write that letter. Carl had the certificate he received for his letter framed. And when he presented it to me, I think it was one of the happiest moments I've ever had.
Well, I can certainly imagine. Thank you very much, Miss Fontaine. You know, we know from their letters that thousands of teachers feel just as you do. Regardless of whether or not they win, it's gratifying for them to know that they are appreciated by their students. As all you students and teachers know, we are again searching for the best teacher of the year, and that certificate Miss Fontaine was telling us about is something to keep in mind. Every student who enters our best teacher contest will receive a handsome certificate suitable for framing to present to the teacher he has nominated. And besides that, there are other wonderful prizes, 552 altogether. Oh, say, by the way, you quiz kids were right on your toes this afternoon with the answers, and you will each receive a $100 savings bond from the makers of Alka-Seltzer to help you with your future education. And now, until next Sunday, friends, it's time to say goodbye, kids.
Bye, Kelly.
The Quiz Kids on Tuned to Yesterday from January 21st, 1951 on NBC. Studs Terkel was special guest. It was a year after the broadcast that Terkel began the Studs Terkel Almanac on WFMT in Chicago, then went on to host the Studs Terkel Show from 1958 to 1998 on that same station. He was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame in 2009. It's an hour of old-time radio quiz programs on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. And now time for Groucho Marx hosting You Bet Your Life, the CBS episode from March 8, 1950.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is heart. H-E-A-R-T.
Really?
You bet your life! The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Groucho!
Well, spring is just around the corner. I wish I was. Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx. Thank you, thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,500 for one of our couples tonight. George Fenneman, who gets first whack at it?
We asked if there were any couples here tonight who had been married more than 50 years, and just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Mr. and Mrs. A.S. Thacker, and here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if you say the secret word at any time we're talking, you'll win $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you always have with you. So you two are married more than 50 years, eh? How long have you been married, Mrs. Thacker?
50 years and last November.
And how long have you been married, Mr. Thacker? How does it feel to be celebrating your 50th wedding anniversary, Mr. Thacker?
Well, it's just beautiful. Yeah. Wonderful.
About the same as the 49th, I suppose. And how was the 48th? Do you remember that?
About the same.
About the same. Well, let's try the 39th. How was that year?
Wonderful, too.
Yes, that was a great year, the 39th. How long have you been in California, Mr. Thacker?
27 years.
Mm-hmm. And why did you come here?
Well, we was living at Spokane at that time, and I wanted a warmer climate.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it have been cheaper to put on heavy underwear? Where did you formerly reside, Mrs. Thacker? Before that, I mean.
Texas, Gainesville, Texas.
Was that near Nacogdoches or Denison or...
yes.
I was once pinched in Nacogdoches for playing euchre on the front porch of the hotel. Happened to be on a Sunday, and you're not allowed to play euchre on Nacogdoches on Sunday. As a matter of the fact, the way I played, they shouldn't have allowed it on Saturday either. May I ask how old you were when you got married, Mrs. Thacker?
20,
eh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how old were you when Mrs. Thacker took you out of circulation?
I was 26.
Well, you're 76?
I'm 77 now.
77. Well, you just passed the spirit of 76. Eh? What sort of work do you do now, Mr. Thacker?
I don't work.
You're a bum? You look so prosperous, Mr. Thacker. You worked a mere 50 years and then quit. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Don't you want to amount to something when you grow up? Do you have any children, Mitty?
Yes, I have two sons.
You have two sons. That's in Arizona, isn't it? Do you have any grandchildren,
yes,
Mrs. Thacker?
Yes, sir. I have two.
Two. Do you have any great-grandchildren?
No, sir.
Do you have any great-great-grandchildren?
No, sir.
You're in a rut. Now, after all these years of marriage, do you have any pet name for your wife, Mr. Thacker?
Yes, sir. I always called her sweetheart.
Well, you just said heart, and that was the secret word, so you just won $100 in cash. Compliments of the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we are definitely using heart as the secret word tonight in honor of the 1950 Heart Campaign now going on all over America. And Mrs. Thacker, what do you call 23 Skidoo here?
Call him Shorty.
You call him Shorty? Is that for any financial reason? Or... Do you remember who did the proposing when you were engaged, Mr. Thacker?
Yes, sir, I did.
Well, what did she say after you proposed?
I don't have any idea.
Maybe she said no. How do you know? This could all be a horrible mistake. Mrs. Thacker, do you remember exactly what you said when he proposed?
No.
You said no? Well, then I was right. It is a horrible mistake. Well, seriously, it's been inspiring having you two here with a 50-year marriage. You've set a fine example for the young couples of America. And I hope you'll invite me to your 75th anniversary. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to work together for a chance to win a lot of money. You bet your life. Now then, let's see if you two youngsters will get the chance at the $1,500. Fenneman, tell them the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected Name the Fruit as your category. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Now, here's your first question. You have $20, and how much will you risk?
10.
What type of fruit is a pippin?
An apple.
An apple is right.
And they're on their way with $30.
You're on your way, as Fenneman says. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. How much of your $30 will you try?
$10.
$10. What is a bartlet?
Pear.
A pear is correct.
Now they have $40, Groucho.
Now you have $40, huh? Here's your third question. How much of the 40 will you try?
20.
What kind of fruit is a muscat? M-U-S-C-A-T.
Grape.
It's a grape.
It's. Do you think it's a grape? And you think it's a grape? Well, it is a grape.
They're climbing now. They have $60, Groucho.
Now you have $60. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 60 are you going to go for?
How much you say, Mother?
I said 30.
Okay, 30. Listen, then.
What is meant by a yellow cling?
A yellow cling is a peach.
Is the peach is right.
And they wind up with a grand total of $90.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, don't go away now. You might get a chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still heart.
Yes, George.
Perhaps the next couple will say it.
Yes, George.
Just before we went on the air,
yes,
our
George.
Studio audience selected Blanche Ames, a department store buyer, and Mr. Alexander Atkinson, a married man. And here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. One of you says the secret word, he wins $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Mr. Atkinson, huh?
Right.
You're the married man?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very happily married.
Very happily.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
There's no point in getting pugnacious about it, huh? Atkinson, are you related to the dramatic critic on the New York Times?
I'm related to a former governor of Georgia.
Well, that's not quite the same thing.
Brooks Atkinson.
I mean Brooks Atkinson.
Oh, yes. He's a distant relative.
Is he? Well, he must be if you're here and he's in New York. You're where are you from, Mr. Atkinson?
I'm from the land of sunshine, flowers, beautiful women, juicy oranges, and no smog.
Are you inferring that we have smog here in California, Mr. Atkinson?
Oh, that's what I've heard. Of course, I live out in beautiful in Channing, San Fernando Valley myself. I don't get out in Los Angeles very much myself.
I see.
I'm kind of intrigued with San Fernando Valley. The promised land.
Well, they've been promising a lot. I don't know whether they're right. Offhand, I would say you are a realtor. Is that right?
Well, I have a little property down in Florida. But recently I got a letter saying...
That it was underwater?
That they discovered... this letter saying they discovered land on my property down there.
They discovered land on your property? That's a mighty good joke. Do you mind if I use that next week?
All right.
Just what is your profession, Mr. Atkinson?
Well, back during the Hoover prosperity that we were having back in the 30s.
I beg your pardon.
You know,
not while I'm smoking, huh?
I got tired of eating the grapefruit and oranges. That's about all I had to eat, so I wanted a little meat. I just go out and catch the bullfrogs at night. I go out at night and catch these frogs, and you take them and fry them in butter. Man, that's better than southern fried chicken.
Well, I must try that sometime.
These tourists came down there. And, you know, these are Yankees. Anyway, they kind of took a liking for these guys.
What do you do now, Senator Claghorn?
Well, at the present time, it's my good fortune to be associated with the finest studio in Hollywood. That comes from the bottom of my heart. That's Warner Brothers. We are really
well,
doing
wait a
things.
Minute. Mr. Atkinson, you went on gabbing so long that you finally won $100. You said heart, and that's the secret word. So you win $100 in cash,
no
compliments at the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America, huh? I certainly will. Mr. Atkinson, are you related to the Atkinson in New York?
I tell you, I got relatives everywhere. Georgia's Phil Fuller. I got relatives all over Georgia.
Yeah, well, you could talk yourself into relatives. How do you do, Miss Ames?
How do you do?
No, I asked you first. How do you do, huh? This is high-class cocktail conversation. You're a department store buyer, is that right?
That's right.
How many department stores have you bought this week?
I don't buy department stores. I buy for a department store.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Well, which one?
Orbach's.
You're from Orbach's, you say?
And Philadelphia.
Did you buy department stores back in Philadelphia?
I'm afraid you don't follow me.
Well, even if I did, there's nothing to be afraid of. Where do you do this buying, Blanche?
At Orbach's in the Oval Room.
And what do you buy for them?
I buy better dresses.
Better dresses? And who buys the worst ones? Huh? Did you ever buy any dresses that your store can't sell?
I get stuck with a few white elephants.
White elephants, huh? I can see why you get stuck with them. What do you do with these white elephants?
Well, when they don't move, why, we usually mark them down for sale.
If they don't move, they must be dead, is that it? Imagine a store full of dead white elephants. Must be quite a problem on a hot day, huh? Well, where do you keep them? Where do you keep these dead white elephants, huh?
Well, we hang them on racks.
Well, no wonder they're dead, huh? Now, let's be calm and go at this thing scientifically, Blanche, huh? Now, what I originally asked you, Blanche, was do you ever buy any dresses for your store that you can't sell?
Yes, I'm afraid to.
Are they changing the styles this year, Blanche?
Yes, the trend is more towards the shorter skirt.
Do you think we could speed up that trend a little, huh? After all, I haven't got so long to go, you know. Well, where are skirts being worn now? And don't tell me around the waist, huh? Where are they being worn now, Blanche?
About halfway between the knee and the floor.
It sounds like you need new elastic in your suspenders. Well, wake up, Mr. Atkinson. How long does your wife wear her dresses?
About 2 or 3 years.
Okay, go back to sleep, Mr. Atkinson. I'll wake you up as soon as Thymon runs again. Well, we know a good deal about department stores and elephants. Now, you're going to work together for a chance at $1,500. You beat our other two couples, and you get a chance at the big question later. I can't tell you how much the first couple won, but Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners.
Mr. and Mrs. Thacker, who've been married for 50 years, earn $90.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected romantic songs as your category. Here's your first question. You have $20. How much are you going to risk?
$10.
Let's see if you can identify this song. Play, Jerry.
Sweet and Lovely.
Sweet and Lovely.
We're on our way with $30, Groucho.
Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the $30 will you try?
$20.
What's the name of this romantic song? Okay, Jerry.
Some secluded rendezvous.
What is it? Talk up. One answer between you.
In some secluded rendezvous. Oh. Cocktails for two.
Yes. Cocktails for two. Runaway Dolly has $50.
Well, you came through in the last quarter there, Blanche. All right, here's your third question. How much of the 50 will you try?
40.
Give me the title of this song.
Once in a while.
Once in a while.
They're really climbing now. They have $90.
All right, you got $90. Now, how
much
are you going?
The whole 90.
Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. You're going to go for the 90?
Go for the 90.
What's this song? Give me the title.
Small
Hotel is right.
And they wind up with $180.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. Now, we'll soon know who gets the chance at the $1,500 question. Fenneman, who's ahead?
The department store buyer and the married man are leading with $180. And the secret word is still heart. We invited some hobos and some job analysts to the show tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Mrs. Evelyn Robbins and Mr. Bill Hewitt.
Fenneman, where on earth did you ever get a hobo?
Oh, you have to ask the hobo, Groucho. And here they come. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to the DeSoto Plymouth program. If one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 instantly. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Okay, now I'll find out where the hobo comes from. Miss Robbins, where are you from?
New York. New York.
How long have you lived out here?
3 years.
3 years. Well, you add quite some beauty to the local scene.
Thank you.
Who do you work for?
The Ames Bureau of Employment.
What do you do there?
Well, I'm a job analyst.
And what is the function of a job analyst?
Well, we interview people, we screen them, and we test them. We try to determine what type of position they're best suited for.
You don't analyze jobs, and you just analyze people. Is that right?
You could say that.
I already did say that. Now, by sifting through all the facts about Evelyn here, I gather that you're the hobo. Is that right?
That's right.
Let me hear you put a bite on me for a cup of coffee. Now, go ahead.
Hobo don't put the bite on anybody for a cup of coffee.
What do you mean? I've had them ask me for coffee.
Well, that's a tramp. Tramp asks you for a cup of coffee. A hobo goes out and gets it different. He gets runs a butcher shop for meat and the bakery for toppings. And then he cooks it up.
Bakery for what?
Toppings. That's day-old bread, stale stuff.
Well, if you want stale stuff, just listen to me here. How do you get it from the butcher? I mean, you walk in there and he throws you a hunk of meat?
Well, you give him a song and dance. Just tell him, say, I'm trying to cook up something down in the jungles down here, and I'd like to have a little meat. It's a good idea to have something under your arm, like some potatoes, and say, look, Mac, I got a loaf of bread here. How about give me a little meat to go with it? They're easy. It's a pushover.
Yeah. I'll try that tomorrow, huh? Tell me, Bill, as a knight of the road, how do you live? Huh?
Oh, sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Like an actor, huh? where do you live?
Well, if I'm working in a city like bellhop or dishwasher, I rent a room. If I'm not working, I live in the jungle.
Well, when you're camping in the jungle, as you call it, what kind of meals do you make?
Make a mulligan stew.
Well, how do you make mulligan stew? Do you get them angry first, or?
Well, first you've got to have a lot of meat, see?
A lot of meat, eh? Yeah. Well, you're back in the butcher shop again, huh?
Then you throw in a lot of vegetables, your own salt and pepper and everything you get, and you cook it in an open fire in a can.
Well, suppose you can't get any meat.
I wouldn't be a mulligan stew then.
No, well, what would you have then? Huh?
That'd be slumgullion, I guess.
What do you drink with your slumgullion?
Oh, battery acid.
Battery acid? Yeah. Well, you should at least be able to start on a cold morning, huh? Just what is battery acid?
Well, that's fresh coffee. The first time it's you boil it off. After that, it's no longer battery acid.
What, do you use it over again?
Sure, then but it's not battery acid then. That's dishwater or mud. Yeah.
How many times do you cook it over?
Oh, that all depends on conditions. Yeah. If you got a lot of coffee, it's not necessary. Sometimes when things are tough, you got to boil it over a lot of times.
In my house, it tastes like dishwater the first time. How do you keep in touch with people when you're on the road? Where do you get your mail?
Oh, mostly general delivery. You know. Yeah,
well, what kind of work do you do when you're working, Bill?
Oh, any kind of work. I've been a sailor. I was a fireman. I worked on deck. Worked in copper mines. Been bellhop. Worked in harvest fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you get from place to place? Do you ride the rods?
Oh, they haven't rode the rods in 25 years. I started first on the whole board in 1950, and I was 15 years old. Yeah, I ride boxcars, ride a reefer.
What's a reefer?
A reefer is the end of a fruit car when it's not iced. And you ride a tender, ride the blinds on a passenger train, ride the deck.
Pretty dangerous, isn't it?
Yes.
What kind of car do you prefer?
Well, I prefer Pullman.
Well, I mean, in lieu of a Pullman, huh?
Well, that depends.
Let's say there isn't a Pullman available, huh? Been de-iced.
Well, that depends on the weather. If it's in the summertime, I like an open gondola where I can see and get the fresh air.
Well, what do you like best about the life you lead?
Well, I like to be free. I don't like to be tied down. I like to go places. I like to get up in the morning when I want to. I don't want some wife telling me to get up or sticking her cold feet in my back.
You prefer a refrigerator car to a woman, is that it?
Well,
this has been very interesting and having you here tonight. And how are you going to try for a chance at the $1,500 question? You beat our other two couples, and you win a chance at all that money. I can't tell you how much our other couples won, but Fenneman's going to remind our listeners.
The department store buyer and the married man are ahead with $180.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected Islands of the World as your category. Is that right? Now, you have $20. How much are you going to try?
$15.
What ocean do you find the Hawaiian Islands?
The Pacific.
Pacific Ocean is right.
Come on, their way. It's $35.
Well, remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Now, how much of the 35 will you try?
25.
25. In what ocean do you find Greenland?
In North Atlantic.
In the Atlantic is right.
We now have $60, Groucho.
Now you have $60. Here's your third question. How much of the 60 will you risk?
50.
In what sea do you find the island of Corsica?
Corsica? The Mediterranean.
The Mediterranean is right.
They're really climbing now. They have $110.
Say, you must have done a lot of reading in those boxcars.
Well, I sailed in there during this war.
Oh, I see. Well, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. Now you have
$110.
$100. In what ocean do you find the Isle of Tahiti?
That's in the Pacific.
In the Pacific is right.
And they wind up with $210. And that means that they get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question.
And here's the hobo and the job analyst, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question, Groucho.
Well, if you win this, you're really going to be able to ride in Pullman's. Here we go for $1,500. Ready? I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on one single answer between you, so think carefully and please, no assistance from the audience. Here it is. In 1914, the United States Army finished its biggest peacetime job. What is the biggest peacetime job ever accomplished by the Army? All right, what is the answer you two have decided upon?
Panama
Canal is right. Well, you had the right answer, so you won $1,500. What are you going to do with all that money? Bill, what are you going to do with yours?
Well, as soon as my heart starts, stops jumping.
Well, Evelyn, you just said the secret word, and you just won $100 in cash, and now my heart is stopping. Well, now, Evelyn, what are you going to do with all that money?
I don't know.
You just dumbfounded, huh? Well, I'll help you spend it, Evelyn. And, Bill, what are you going to do with yours?
Well, first I'm going to ride...
Boy, a lot of slumgullion with that, huh?
I'm going to ride that preferred berth you talked about.
Well, you really cleaned up tonight. You won $210 in the quiz and $100 for the secret word and $1,500. All I can say to you both is congratulations. From the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast, you bet your life.
You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Bob Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life. Presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week, the big question will be worth $1,000.
Fenneman, if you have nothing better to do this week, why don't you see our new movie, Love Happy? Hoppo, Chico, and I tell a few jokes and do some acting. It's very educational. Well, it's almost time for Bing Crosby, so good night, folks. And remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
You Bet Your Life on Tuned to Yesterday from March 8, 1950 on CBS. That brings to a close this hour of quiz shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.